Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we're heading for some interesting waters as the 27th is coming around. And look, you've got Kyrsten Sinema. That's how I always screw her name up. You got her saying if we don't get the bipartisan bill, the other one is dead in the water. We're getting nothing. You got Joe Manchin who's saying, well, let's take a little pause, maybe till next year. You got folks on the progressive side saying, well, we don't get one, you're not getting the other. We're in really an interesting time right now. I'm here to share some thoughts on maybe how to figure this all out and move us in a more positive direction. I've asked our good friend Bill Scheer to come talk with us. Bill's a contributing editor over at Politico Magazine. You can check out his work over at BillScheerMedia.com. Bill, thanks for taking time for us.
Happy to be here. I don't know if I'm going to deliver on the positivity, but I'm going to try.
No, see, I got to tell you, I'm someone who believes we're getting nothing. So I start from a position of probably going to get nothing. Or the other scenario is Republicans come to the rescue in the House just to send a wedge between the Democrats come 2022.
Well, you know, I certainly thought that Republicans might do that, and they still might. I actually wrote an article in Real Clear Politics on Monday making the case why they should, for their own interest. If they think they're going to produce Democrats in disarray by voting no, I think at minimum they run the risk of doing the opposite. That right. Could push the progressives and moderates together, because if the moderates say, hey, Republicans, you're going to move the goalposts, you're going to take a bipartisan bill and you're going to tank it, then what trust can I have in you? You leave me no choice, but I just do what I can with the progressives. Whereas, you know, what the Republicans have been saying is, we don't want the bills linked. We don't want the infrastructure bill linked to the bigger reconciliation bill, which is understandable on their part. They don't want their conservative constituents to think they aided this enormous progressive bill. So they have reason to want these things separated. Well, if Republicans vote with AOC and vote with the squad, that is voting to link the bills. That's not voting to de-link the bills. But they might operate rationally.
Right. You know,
they might be thinking it this way. And there's no evidence. There's only two Republicans on the record right now saying they would vote for it. And they're going to need a lot more than that if they're actually going to offset having their progressives withhold from the bill.
Right.
So as of today, you certainly can't be optimistic that the infrastructure bill is going to pass. And you have moderates saying, well, if that doesn't pass, then we're not going to vote for reconciliation. If that's where we are, I'm not saying that is where we're going to land, but just on its face, it would mean nobody gets anything.
Right. And this is where I started from the beginning. And all of my progressive friends were saying, no, Rick, you're wrong. We're going to get both bills. And I'm like, I keep saying we're getting nothing at the end of this road other than headache and heartache. And sadly, you know, trouble come next election season, simply because of where we are politically, and that we can't seem to get things over the goal line on the Democratic side. Now, today you tweeted out basically a quote of Kyrsten Sinema. You know, you said Sinema to Joe Biden, if the House delays its scheduled September 27th vote on the bipartisan infrastructure plan, or if the vote fails, she won't be backing a reconciliation bill. Basically that, and you got AOC to quote tweet you saying, look, you know, you can't change the terms of the deal. The deal was they would be linked together if we had this September 27th deadline, right?
Well, I don't understand. Well, there's two things I don't understand. Number one is AOC is saying you can't change the terms of the deal. There never was a deal between progressives and moderates in terms of the sequencing of these two bills. Pelosi said early in the summer that she was not going to move the bipartisan infrastructure bill until reconciliation got through the Senate. Although now Pelosi has modified that. That's like a two-column shot. I think Pelosi has moved off that position, but let's just get back to where we were in the summer. Pelosi made that marker. Biden said these go in tandem. Then Biden walked away from that under moderate pressure. You never heard the moderates say, we agree, Nancy Pelosi, these things go in tandem. They've always said that the infrastructure bill, the bipartisan bill, should be treated on its own merits and reconciliation on its own merits. There's no deal there. Now, progressives, to be fair to them, when the bipartisan deal was done, they immediately said, well, we didn't sign on to that. We didn't say we're going to vote for that on its own. You know, so no one's being dishonest as far as their own position is concerned, but there's no changing or undoing of a deal that did never existed.
Right.
So that I think AOC's not being fair in that regard on that. Number two, you don't, as angry as progressives surely are with Sinema, at the end of the day, they need Sinema's vote. They can't get reconciliation without Sinema's vote. And so, you know, what's the best way to get her vote? Is it to browbeat her and shame her in public? Or is it to talk with her privately and work out a deal? I would think the latter myself. But of course, I could certainly, maybe they can bear all sorts of grassroots pressure on her and make her crack. I just feel like looking at the past 7 months, there's been a lot of progressive ire directed towards Sinema, and I haven't seen her crack. So I wouldn't think that's the way to approach her, but that's not the way AOC's going about it.
Yeah, no, but I'm of the mindset a little, some carrots, some sticks. You got to do a little bit of both. You know, keep moving in that direction. Little fear back home helps move in the right direction. But also, you know, in the old days, you would just go, what do you want? What bridge in Arizona do you need? You know, what program is it? Because, you know, I'm looking at both her and Manchin and going, you know, especially Manchin from West Virginia, one of the poorest states in the country. What do you need? What is it you want to, what bacon do you want to bring home? Because we got to get this across the line. Because next year come election cycle, if you don't get this bigger infrastructure bill, this human infrastructure bill, you are going to get slaughtered at the ballot box.
Well, that's why what you just said at the end there is why I've generally been optimistic that something will pass. It doesn't really serve any Democrats' interest to, you know, to ruin Biden's presidency. If Biden is at 40% because he is seen as impotent in his position and cannot deliver anything for the public, well, that takes down every vulnerable Democrat come 2022. So there's collective interest in doing something,
yeah.
But there is not consensus on what that something is right now. And so to the other point, what do they want? What's very difficult, there's levels of difficulty here. Number one, Manchin and Sinema are not plain spoken people. When you see Manchin on TV, it's a lot of word salad. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Particularly if you actually know what's going on, it really makes no sense at all. So you really can't discern her what is his bottom line. And Sinema doesn't talk much at all. So there's a lot under the surface that we don't know what their bottom line really is. But also keep in mind, they're not the only two moderates in this picture. There's other Senate moderates who also don't talk a lot. There are different pockets of House moderates, and they're not all working collectively. They don't have like a set 5 points they're all pushing for. They all have their little provincial agendas. And this is, I would say, the biggest single piece of legislation ever attempted in American history. There are so many moving parts to this. It's a very hard thing to do. And it would be hard to do in any circumstance. This is also one of the narrowest majorities in American history, where any few number of people can thwart your majority. So it's a real high wire act that Democrats are trying to accomplish here. And hey, bully for them if they can pull it off. But it shouldn't be surprising that it's hitting resistance at the front end of this process, and then it's going to take some time to work it all out. And there is risk of it not working out.
No, it's something we need desperately. And I've been saying, look, if you can get the $1.5 trillion that Manchin said that, you know, he might be willing to go up to, I say you grab it and you run. You get it put into law, you get it somewhat funded, and then you fight next year to go, hey, we got it. We need to fully fund it. But you got to get it first.
Well, that funding piece is so critical and complicated. I mean, you know, just with the bipartisan infrastructure bill, which was a smaller bill, figuring out the pay-fors was the hardest part of that negotiation, and they weren't even trying to do progressive things with it. They were trying to essentially avoiding progressive things, avoiding progressive taxation, avoiding taxation on the wealthy and corporations. Now Democrats want to do a big progressive reform. And not every individual Democrat is on board for every individual piece. Anytime you change the tax code, there are winners and losers.
Right.
And those winners and losers are not evenly distributed across the country. So, you know, one guy in one district, his constituency is hit hard there. It might even be a majority of his constituents or her constituents. It might just be a faction. But that faction might be the difference between that person winning or losing in the next election. So they have to be sensitive to that. So there's that, you know, complicated aspect of it. And the less you can do on the funding front, the less you can pay for, all those parts are so hard to line up. And another budgetary trick here that is also complicated about what you want to fund. The moderates are generally saying, let's fund things for longer periods of time. Let's not do short-term extensions. And progressives are more inclined to do things short-term because if you could do more things within your top line. I mean, right now, this cannot be bigger than $3.5 trillion under the terms of the budget resolution that previously passed. They can't go higher.
Right.
So if that's your ceiling and you want to do child tax credit, enhanced ACA subsidies, Medicare, dental, vision, hearing, universal pre-K, community college, elder care, climate, you want to do all those things within that under that ceiling, well, I'll do this one for 1 year, this one for 2 years, this one for 3 years, because on its own, it doesn't cost as much. And you might be saying, wink, wink, we'll extend it later, but it won't blow the cap of this bill. The moderates are saying, we see that gimmick a mile away. You're not really being honest about the cost. We'll do child tax credit for 4 or 5 years. We'll do ACA subsidies for 4 or 5 years. But then that's eating up a larger chunk of the pie, and maybe you can't do dental, vision, hearing then, for example. So that's one of the many points of friction that is happening right now, and that's why this is not getting done, you know, in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, I started from the beginning, and, you know, I've got friends who were in Congress at the time, and how we used to do budgets in the old days is you had 13 budget resolutions that would come through the House for different things. I'm with a mindset, why can't we use those 13 budget resolutions and bring those through reconciliation one by one and cut this giant bill down into much smaller ones that would be easier to sell and more digestible?
Well, just to be technical, normally you 13 appropriations bills.
Right.
That an appropriation bill generally covers the next fiscal year. They're not designed to be the next 10 years. And that's just sort of your basic, you keep the government running, you know, tweak here, tweak there. Democrats right now presume, or at least recognize the good chance, they won't have control of Congress in 2023. That this is their shot. This is their shot to do the big stuff, to get that embedded in the social fabric. And so by 2024, I mean, even if it doesn't pay off in 2022, maybe by 2024 it will pay off. And they will be rewarded by the public for that. And you know, there is no one lowering expectations about what can be done. So everyone's trying to get on this train. This is the train leaving the station. Get your thing in this bill because there will be no other bill. Yeah. So that's an understandable impulse, but it sure makes the legislative process really, really complicated.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And I'm still the ever-lover pessimist in this, and I fear nothing happens. If you were a betting man, if you were putting money down, how do you see it playing out?
Well, I can't really bet on infrastructure passing on Monday, what I've read in the paper today. I mean, maybe things change between now and then, but you have no reason to be optimistic based on what information that we currently have. And boy, after that, once, because Requesters will say, aha, we took the hostage and we won. Now we have better leverage for reconciliation. Moderates, if you want anything, you gotta do things our way. And then moderates are saying, well, we're just gonna tank the whole thing. And now you're back in a stalemate. At some point, they got to get in a room together and work it out. There has to be trust. There's no trust right now. I mean, to do what you're talking about before, one bill at a time, if there was trust, that's what you would do. You would pass infrastructure now, and knowing you'll get to reconciliation short enough, or you would do 6 or 7 bills one at a time because you're confident the next steps would come. Right now, the progressives don't trust the moderates will come along. They think if they give them one thing now, they won't get the second thing, let alone the third, fourth, or seventh.
And I completely agree. You pass that bipartisan bill, you're getting nothing on the bigger bill. At least that's my view. You're getting nothing.
I mean, that's the fear. I don't know if that is true, but clearly that's what's driving the progressive thinking right now. And until there is trust, we're not going to move forward.
Last question I wanted to ask you about, because today the news came out of this 6-point memo. I don't know if you happen to see the Trump lawyer memo of the 6-point plan to overturn the election. Any thoughts about the story today?
I haven't seen the memo, but it's just one more data point of what I think we all know, that they really went to the mat trying to overturn the election. I think the optimistic view about this, we had a sitting president of the United States do everything he possibly could to overturn the election and could not do it. The Constitution is stronger than that. It is not so simple to steal an election. You need to have one hell of a conspiracy. You need to have a whole lot of people lined up at every level of government, state legislatures, judges, state judges, federal judges. Everyone's got to be in on the scam if you're going to pull it off. And these Keystone cops are not able to pull it off. I know people will say, well, if you had different people in different places, maybe they would have pulled it off. And I can't definitively argue otherwise, but I do think it is very, very hard to steal an American presidential election in broad daylight. And they tried it. They failed.
But again, it comes back to, had it not been for Mike Pence, maybe it's a whole different outlet. Had he done what Trump wanted, had he done what the crowd on January 6th was ready to hang him over not doing, we could be in a different place.
Hey, give the props to my man Dan Quayle, who told Mike Pence, the authority. You, for those of you on the radio who can't see this, I am wearing my Dan Quayle Center and Museum shirt, which I think is only one in existence, because I visited the Dan Quayle Vice Presidential Museum and Center in Huntington, Indiana. And I wear the shirt proudly today as one of the people who saved the Constitution, saved the Republic.
I now got to go to the Dan Quayle Vice Presidential Library now. I got to do it. All because of you, Bill. Bill, I appreciate the time. Hope folks will check out your work over at BillShareMedia.com. He does work over at Politico Magazine and Real Clear Politics. Bill, always great talking with you, my friend.
You too. Take care.
Good stuff, Bill Shear. Make sure you check out his work. Quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.